ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, entitled Prahlad, the Saintly Son of Hiranyakashipu, text 19. Tata enam gurur gyatvam gyata gyeya chatushtayam daityendram darshayam asha matri mrishtam alankritam. Tata enam gurur gyatva. Tata enam gurur gyatva. Jata geya chatushtayam. Gyata geya chatushtayam. Daityendram dashayam asha. Daityendram dashayam asha. Matrimrishtam alankritam. Matrimrishtam alankritam. Tatayanam gurur gyatva. Gyatageya chatushtayam. Daityendram dashayam asha. Matrimrishtam alankritam. Tatainam gurur gyatva. Gyatva geya chatushtayam. Daityendram darshayam asha. Matrimrishtam alankritam. Tatainam gurur gyatva. Anainam chatushtutam. Nyandadanasam. Tanishtam alankritam. Mataji. Anainam gurur gyatva. Yatageyam chatushtayam. Kendram darshayam asha. Matrimrishtam alankritam. Tataha. Thereafter. Enam. Him. Prahlad Maharaj. Guru. His teachers, gyatva, knowing, Vyata, known. Gyeya, which are to be known. Chatushtayam, the four diplomatic principles. Sama, the process of pacifying. Dana, the process of giving money in charity. Bheda, the principle of dividing. And danda, the principle of punishment. Daitya Indram, Anto Hiranyakashipu, the king of the daityas. Darshayam Asha, presented. Matri Mrishtam, being bathed by his mother. Alankritam, decorated with ornaments. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace S. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After some time, the teachers, Sanda and Amarka, thought that Prahlad Maharaj was sufficiently educated in the diplomatic affairs of pacifying public leaders, appeasing them by giving them lucrative posts, dividing and ruling over them, and punishing them in case of disobedience. Then, one day, after Prahlad's mother had personally washed the boy and dressed him nicely with sufficient ornaments, they presented him before his father. Purport. It is essential for a student who is going to be a ruler or a king to learn the four diplomatic principles. There is always rivalry between a king and his citizens. Therefore, when a citizen agitates the public against the king, the duty of the king is to call him and try to pacify him with sweet words, saying, "You are very important in the state. Why should you disturb the public with some new cause for agitation?" If the citizen is not pacified, the king should then offer him some lucrative post as a governor or minister, any post that draws a high salary, so that he may be agreeable. If the enemy still goes on agitating the public, the king should try to create dissension in the enemy's camp. But if he still continues, the king should employ argumentum ad baculum, severe punishment, by putting him in the jail or placing him before a firing squad. The teachers appointed by Hiranyakashipu taught Prahlad Maharaj how to be a diplomat so that he could rule over the citizens very nicely. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityaname Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Reshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrindan Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tatayenam Gurur Gyatva Yata Gyeya Chatushtayam Daityendrum Darshayam Asha Matri Mrishtam Alankritam. After some time, the teacher Sanda and Amarka thought that Prahlad Maharaj was sufficiently educated in the diplomatic affairs of pacifying public leaders, appeasing them by giving them lucrative posts, dividing and ruling over them, and punishing them in case of disobedience. Then, one day, after Prahlad's mother had personally washed the boy and dressed him nicely with sufficient ornaments, they presented him before his father. So, as all the other verses, this verse is also very instructive. And it points out the actual purpose of demonic education. In essence, this is the subject of this verse. What is the purpose of the education that people of demonic mentality are trying to enforced actually upon everyone. And here we see that the main principle of that kind of education is how to remain present and how to remain present on particular posts or to obtain some particular posts and how to retain that post, whatever it's necessary to be performed in order to secure and keep that particular position in the society or in relationship to others. So this is the purpose of education amongst the demoniac classes of people. We know that Prahlad Maharaj instructed later on Hiranyakashipu, his own father, that actually when his father questioned him and called him very nicely, that what is the greatest, what is the most wonderful thing that you have learned, and of course Prahlad Maharaj said and speaks about Lord Vishnu. And later on, as Hiranyakashipu gets upset and angered, Prahlad Maharaj points out saying that actually there is no question of enemies or friends. These are all mental concoctions. Dear father, why are you so upset with the idea of Vishnu being your enemy? Essentially, we understand that Vishnu is nobody's enemy. Krishna cannot be anyone's enemy. The only enemy that exists is the enemy within us. And these real enemies are the ones who are causing us so many difficulties, so many troubles. And we know what those enemies are. Essentially, it starts with lust. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhava, mahashano mahapapma, vidyena miha vairinam. Vairinam is the greatest burning force that impels us to act in such abominable ways and causes us more distress and more difficulty than anybody else could do that in the world. It's always said, it is very easy to conquer the whole world, but it's the most difficult to conquer those urges that are impelling us to act in such an inappropriate ways, especially lust, anger, greed, madness, mada, moha, matsarya. Trividam narakasyadam dvaram nashanam atmanaha kama krodha tataloba tasmadetam trayam tyajat. Krishna says, these are the three gates, trividam, narakasyadam, that lead us to the hell, lust, anger and greed. And the whole purpose of this demonic education is actually to pour more ghee, to pour more oil, to pour more fuel on that burning fire of lust. This is what demonic education is all about. It's just to inflame more all these agitating urges and make us burn and make everybody else burn into that fire of lusty desires. And therefore Prahlad Maharaj, after being instructed by Sanda and Amarka, was very nicely presented in front of Hiranyakashipu by his mother, who, as we see here, decorated him very nicely. And as everybody thought, especially his teacher, Sanda and Amarka, that Prahlad is now sufficiently educated. He is capable now of ruling the citizens and establishing his own supremacy. He is the next king in line after Hiranyakashipu. Now he is qualified to take things over. And therefore this was supposed to be something that would please Hiranyakashipu immensely. And everybody was anticipating what is going to happen, how everybody is going to react. So this was that kind of a pinnacle of educating system that was supposed to make everyone, especially in this case we see Prahlad Maharaj, capable of dealing with others in a manner that would secure, as we said in the beginning, his position of authority and his position as everybody considers to had that kind of position, or at least striving for it, of Ishvaroham Aham Bhogi. I'm the Ishvara. That's why we are here in this material world. We think I'm the Ishvara, I'm the controller. I'm the one, I'm the supreme. And anybody challenges that, as it is explained in 16th chapter, that principle of demoniac mentality, anybody's challenging that, that person's going to be dead tomorrow. I have so many enemies and so many I have killed. And I'm the enjoyer. Ishvaroham Aham Bhogi. I'm the enjoyer. I'm Bhokta. Everything is subservient to my desire, to my will, to my enjoyment. So this is what that demonic education is aimed towards. And Prahlad was supposed to be now proficient in understanding how to apply all these different principles of diplomacy, all the different principles of politics. We understand sometimes diplomacy is necessary. We know how Bhishma talks about it. We know how Bhishma describes the principles of politics in Mahabharata, whole Shanti Parva. It's very much in detail dealing with this kind of subjects. But it has its utility, definitely. But it doesn't have to be, or it shouldn't be actually aimed at the cost of anybody else. It should be beneficial to elevate everybody else to the principle of attachment towards Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to the principle of detachment from all the different kinds of material affairs which are harming to other living entities, and especially towards ourselves. This is what these principles of politics and diplomacy are meant for. In the West there is a saying, they say that diplomacy means to send somebody to hell and having him, you know, wishing him for a nice journey, having him, you know, very wonderful thoughts for that kind of a journey. So you send somebody to hell, but you know, you make him, you know, like kind of very anticipating, very enthusiastic about that kind of a journey. That is what diplomacy essentially means, or politics. So you're really absolutely contrary to being a benefactor or some kind of a well-wisher to any kind of person, but you present things in such a way that person is very enthusiastic, very pleased, you know, either to follow or to do anything that will actually cause him to experience suffering at the end. So this is what diplomacy practically is really all about. When it is infused by such kind of demonic principles, not when it's infused by some kind of a positive purpose. Like we know, Krishna is also very diplomatic. Duryodhana was absolutely diplomatic. Duryodhana was known as the greatest diplomat amongst all. He was so expert. He would address, as we know from Bhagavad Gita, he would address Bhishma and Drona in such a way that he would point out to different levels of seniority in such a way that everybody would be pleased, that nobody would be displeased, and they would still be encouraged to fight for him and sacrifice their lives for him. That's what Krishna was pointing out. That's what's going to happen anyway. So he addressed first, when addressing all the generals, he described the army of the Pandavas, which was kind of limited. And interestingly, at one point, there was the use of the words apadyaptam, which is insufficient. One of the meaning could be insufficient. So therefore, when addressing Drona later on, it would point out that Drona was kind of an important factor, an important very person in the ranks of the Kaurava army, because he is the one who could counteract and who is the prevailing over the Kuru side, and therefore being able to look Pandava's army kind of insufficient or incapable. But also from another point of view, it looked like Drona's strength was actually insufficient. In a sense that he has to be aided by the other great generals like Bhishma, so that Bhishma could understand that actually, yes, it's very important that we all, you know, fight together, And in that way only we can be capable of winning over the Pandavas. And then in another way, in another instance, Duryodhana also, he points out, he first calls out Drona as the greater of the warriors, and because Drona is Brahmana. And then Bhishma, because Bhishma is Kshatriya. Although Bhishma actually is the general. He is the main and the most important warrior actually in the whole of the Kaurava army. But just being very diplomatic and knowing how to put things, you know, together and present them appropriately, Duryodhana knows how to inspire practically everyone to perform their so-called duty, false duty. That would be in that category of demonic kind of Varnashram Dharma, Asuri Varnashram Dharma, fighting for the wrong principles. Or executing duties for the wrong principles. And therefore Arjuna also was very confused. He didn't know why he should, you know, fight for this kingdom. One of his arguments of indecisiveness was that Duryodhana is so capable, he's such a wonderful king. He's such an expert politician, he's such an expert diplomat. And people are getting whatever they required. They're having their dharma, they're having their artha, they're having their kama, and maybe they might get their moksha. And Arjuna wasn't willing to fight. He said, just for sake of me putting on the throne, what is the point? Duryodhana is already very nicely ruling the citizens. But Arjuna didn't understand that there were no higher principles of life. There were no higher principles of detaching ourselves from this material world and attaching ourselves towards Krishna. This is what was so important and so essential. This is what all this world is meant for, to educate us, to come back, to assume our original position in relationship to Lord Krishna. Not just being satisfied with some temporary posts and again inflaming those lusty desires of Labha, Puja and Pratishtha and thinking this is the aim of life. And at some point, this is something that's going to absolutely satisfy us. If we have some position of power and rule over the others, that this is something that's going to be so pleasing to our heart. So Arjuna was confused in that regard. And then Krishna enlightened him, pointing out that what is the use of all the material, you know, opulences and principles that there might be existing if there is no central point. That's one that is in relationship to me. Because ultimately, anyway, anything that is obtained in this world, material world, it's temporary. And this is why all these demons are, you know, learning different kinds of policies through which they are trying to keep themselves on the post by any means. By Beda, how is it called in the Sanskrit? Dana, Sama, Dana, Beda and Danda. The four basic principles. They will do anything just to, you know, stay on the post as long as they can. Actually, once any politician occupies his post, the next thing, it's not concern how he's going to fulfill his promises to the people, but a concern how to remain in the office and getting rid of his opponents. That's the only thing. How he can remain in the office. And this we can see throughout the world how it is taking place. It is so unfortunate. So many horrible atrocities are being committed in the most grossest ways throughout the world, just that somebody remains on the post and trying to retain his position. Just maybe last 1-2 years also we can see in Syria what is going on, or we can hear in Syria what is going on. One particular person by no means wants to be removed from his post, no matter what it takes for. Even so many, you know, lakhs of people might be murdered and tortured and killed and whatever, but that person won't step down. So adamant about his position. And that's all. There's nothing that it's in relationship to the people and benefit of the people. Nobody cares about it. It's just about particular posts. Of course, which is being very nicely flamed by interests of many other so-called world powers. And being exploited, that's another principle of dividing. Beda. They divide the place, create trouble, create some kind of a this union by on the basis of religion, on the basis of, you know, whatever it might be there, and exploit the whole situation, exploit the country, exploit the resources. This is how the things are done. But of course, before that, it's very interesting in economics what is going on, how the world, and how Americans actually are exploiting the most of the planet, because I don't know what is the percentage exactly, but very small percentage of the people who live in the Western world are utilizing resources from the whole planet that exists on the whole planet. It is said that if we all would have been living that kind of consumerist life as people in the West are doing and living, and it would require 6 more planets like this one in order to have all these different kinds of standards, economical standards that they are having. Just imagine how much would have to be required, therefore, to exploit. And this is why the resources are limited, and therefore there is so much concern about some particular place which is rich in the resources. And therefore the means are not important. What is important is just to gain and exploit something that is available in some other place. And when it doesn't work by some nice means, you know, some kind of economical offer or this and that, you know, or some friendly offer of a position, that person can retain position, let's say, and then provides on the cheaper rate, whatever, let's say in that case, or mostly what is now in demand, it's oil. That's a good one. And it said that all the wars take place because of God. G-O-D. All the wars in the world that are happening because of God. Do you agree with that? Okay, Brahma Samhita probably said no. Anybody else has some opinion about it? That all the wars take place because of G-O-D? Yeah, it's not like this. It's not because of God. Sometimes it is good excuse, and sometimes in the name of religion many things happen. That is there. That is also there. But that G-O-D stands for G, means gold. O stands for oil. And D stands for drugs. So in that sense it's correct. All the wars take place because of G-O-D. It's a fact. Either because of money, gold, some economical interest, either because of oil, mostly it's because of oil, but it's pretty much about drugs as well. All the stuff in Afghanistan going on, if you want to study or go through whatever last 20 years, even more than that, it's all because of drugs, opium. Anyway, I don't want to go into it. And maybe you can find out on your own if you're really interested about it. It's drugs, a lot about drugs. Colombia, there's so many other places, and you know, whichever are producers of the opium and stuff. So much, so many different kinds of conflicts taking place because of that. It's a huge money. It's a huge industry that, you know, is set up behind it. So much interest is there. So therefore, when this doesn't work, then of course, like now Americans, now they're sending their troops to Syria also. Ground force has to be there. It didn't work in this way, it didn't work in that way. Now they're sending troops down. That's the last means of trying to control some particular place and exploit it. Last means. But before that it comes, something that it's very known, and interestingly, in economics it is called economic hitman. It's the person who represents particular power and tries to negotiate different kinds of deals with the leadership of some particular country. And if that doesn't succeed, then the force is employed. But usually those deals are will give you so much credit, will give you so much loans to build up your country, which of course it never happens, or if it does, it happens to a very small extent, and huge credits are drawn by that country, which gets so much in debt that practically can never repay it, and that country being exploited to the absolute sense, And none of the people get any of the benefits. And even when that country is being so to say built, you know, all the infrastructure and everything comes from the, you know, power which supplies, you know, the working force and all the infrastructure and whatever. So only few people, you know, on the top of that regime, so to say, which is again placed in by that particular power, benefit, and everybody else still remains poor as they were. Nobody benefits after that. So even when somebody doesn't agree to that, then as I said, then there is that kind of danda. But that danda, it's not danda like, you know, like parents punish the child or parents or something that we were relating. Bhishma is pointing out to something that is positive, something that is, you know, beneficial, something that is towards the aim of renunciation and spiritual enlightenment. No, it's towards the exploitation. That is kind of danda that is taking place mostly nowadays. And all these wars that are taking place. You know, China also, so many news about China building up their army. Of course, they're not. It's not going to be so easy. You know, they have also so many competitors. They cannot just jump on India or anybody, any other place, Vietnam or Philippines or something. So there are so many strategies that are being built up in order to exploit others. It's a demonic principle. And this is what nowadays is considered to be topmost education. How to be very expert in hacking all the computer systems and programs and stuff and try to, you know, enter into somebody else's, you know, secret files and, you know, manipulate and exploit and being able to, you know, conquer and stuff like that. This is where all the education is aimed for. But that is not education. That's not education according to the Vedic standards. This is miseducation. Prabhupada said this is therefore nowadays, whenever we consider something to be an education, it's a slaughterhouse. It's a slaughterhouse. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said it's a slaughterhouse. Because it slaughters your spiritual life. For what? For some so-called dharma, artha and kama. There's not going to be any moksha. Forget it. Just for some economic benefit. All the education is nowadays, it's aimed towards economical development. For sake of some sense gratification. These are demonic principles. And this is what everybody in Hiranyakashipu taught and considered. This is the pinnacle of education. This is the essence of what everybody should learn. As I said initially, in order to retain themselves on some particular posts or to exploit others for their own sense gratification. These are the hardcore demonic principles. But that's not education. But that kind of mood even prevails. Even sometimes devotees, when they go to universities and when they study, this is the environment they're surrounded with. And it's many times very difficult to resist and not to be affected. We are all affected by it. Everybody is affected. It's like a radiation, like nuclear fallout. Even you don't want it, you're going to get affected to one degree or another. You don't have to be exposed to it directly, to direct blasts. Because we hear it. We see it on the billboards. We are exposed to one degree or another. It's like radiation. And the worst thing, once it gets stuck in the mind, it remains there for years. The information is already absorbed. Just like radiation, the blast takes place once. It's a very short term living or existing. It's very short, just once. It happens, blast, whatever it knocks down, you know, buildings, this and that. That's it. But radiation is going to remain for years and years and years and years. You see in Japan or Ukraine or wherever, any kind of, you know, nuclear blast that happened for whichever reason, it's remaining for decades. So we should be very careful not to expose ourselves to such kind of radiation, material radiation, which is contaminating our consciousness. What kind of consciousness we will have? We will have developed desires for labha, puja and pratishta. I have this kind of degree and I'm very proud because I have this kind of degree. It is described in Shastra, this is like a, you know, person having a big turban. I'm such a great, like in Rajasthan people and sometimes in Gujarat have a big turban, you know, they can, you know, put so much cloth on it. And this is some kind of a social, you know, signifies some kind of social status. But if that person doesn't become humble and offers obeisances, it just represents the big burden on the head. That's all. Big burden. So therefore we should be very careful not to allow ourselves even to be exposed to such kind of thought that this is something that is so essential and important. It might be, it can be used for Krishna, but essentially Prabhupada would discourage anybody to, you know, venture into such kind of exploits, so to say. Because it is very dangerous. Once we become devotee, we should know about Krishna. We know about Krishna, we will know about everything else. Because through materialistic education, we become more entangled and more attached to, again, position, control, power, and so many other things that demons aspire for. Whereas devotees develop contrary qualities, humility, detachment, and attachment towards Krishna's lotus feet. It's a big difference. I know once Krishna Kshetra Swami, he earned his PhD degree in Sanskrit from Oxford University, just maybe some, well, less than 10 years back. Although he was he's a very senior Srila Prabhupada's disciple. But later on, for preaching purpose, for the higher cause, he went to study again and earn his degree so that he can utilize it in his preaching field. And he said, every time I entered the door of the university, he said, I'm praying to Krishna, please protect me, because I have a feeling like I'm entering into the Agasura's mouth. Whenever I enter into the university, he said, it's like Agasura's mouth. So only with that kind of consciousness somebody can, you know, sustain his devotional consciousness, his devotional life. Otherwise, if we think that this is something wonderful, then we will gain so much out of it, then we'll be also contaminated and we'll be gone. Our spiritual life will be ruined practically. Although in the name of spiritual life, we may be, you know, doing whatever we might be doing, but that kind of contamination will remain in our hearts. So the real education, the real purpose of human life should be to know about Krishna. Because as I said, once we know about Krishna, we will know about everything. And Krishna is the one who gives us the knowledge. The dami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantate tesham tatata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Krishna is the one who gives us knowledge. Krishna is the one who gives us intelligence. There is no need to go anywhere else. Krishna is going to supply everything that we require. But of course, if we, you know, like Prabhupada said, when you have a degree, it's like a dog going from one door to another, waving his tail. Here I am, looking for the master. Who's going to be my master? And Prabhupada describes, it's like, you know, you come to some door, you know, please accept me as, you know, your servant. And somebody slams the door, get lost, go to some other place. Prabhupada said, essential education, studying is not bad. School is not, I mean, he said school is not bad, studying is not bad, but this materialistic education, this materialistic universities, they are bad. So he was not discouraging, you know, anybody from studying. He would very much encourage you. That's why we have Bhakti Shasti program, Bhakti Vaibhava program, Bhakti Sarvabhauma program, so many different kind of educational courses. But not the ones which are making somebody to become more and more attached and becoming so exploitative as somebody with demonic nature is. It is based, that kind of education is based on completely different principles of life. And they give different results. So what do we want? Even you learn, like what Prahlad Maharaj had learned. You know, you learn how to deal with others. You're very diplomatic. You're able to pacify them. You know, give them some very nice position. You're able to give them so much wealth and this and that. Or you divide. Or you, whatever, you use, you know, danda. Whatever you do, but you'll be always in anxiety. Because nothing's permanent in this material world. And this is why all these demons are in permanent anxiety. How to secure their position. Permanent anxiety. So what is the use of that kind of education? What is the use? You can't trust anybody You're just thinking, how this person, there are so many examples in the history, so many kings, they couldn't even trust their own closest ministers. But somebody would make politics. I think in Panchatantra stories, always it's so interesting about lion and two bulls. If anybody knows that story, anyway, I won't go into this. How he divided them, one against each other. There is a good story about Tilottama. If you know the story about Tilottama from Mahabharata, how two brothers which were so close, nobody could do anything to them. They were so powerful, demoniac brothers. But then Tilottama was created by Lord Brahma and she was very whatever. And they just got completely bewildered. And the only way was to secure her, you know, they would have fight each other and both they killed each other practically. Over her. That's a different story now. And different purports. Why they didn't fight. But the point is they were divided. They were divided. So that's why Srila Prabhupada said, in the spiritual life, we should learn how to cooperate. And no way on any kind of materialistic basis, for the sake of position, for the sake of control, we should, harm or make offenses towards the devotees, because we're going to ruin our spiritual life. We have to be very careful. Just for sake of Labha, Puja and Pratishtha, again, subtle ego, we commit so many offenses so that we can present ourselves as better than somebody else. That means we are feeding that demon within us, which actually has to be cut out from the heart. But that's only possible by humility, by proper education, but really understanding who we are. They're so insignificant. And it's so easy, but it's so difficult to understand. We get, when we practice spiritual life, you get everything. Krishna is giving everything. Like Prahlad Maharaj. Why Prahlad Maharaj wouldn't be interested in this education? He's been given everything. The topmost education, name it. Princeton, Oxford, Cambridge, whichever university you want to, grade as the best one. Whatever. He has been given the topmost opportunity. Sanda and Amarka, there is nobody better in it. He's been given the best opportunity, the best offer to study under such qualified Brahmins. Personalities. I don't know how much he had to give in, how much he had to pay, for all this. And later you have to go for a loan and repay it back, Anyway, he didn't have that trouble like his students have nowadays. And he had given such a wonderful opportunity. Of course he learned it. And we know he's gonna utilize it, but in positive purposes. But he essentially wasn't interested in it. Why? Because he had got something better. Rasavarjam rasyopriyasya param drishtvani vartate. He had got better taste, higher taste from Narada Muni. He had learned everything already. And when he was exposed to such kind of a so-called knowledge, he wasn't absolutely interested in it. I remember myself, when I started reading, I was also still studying. When I started reading Srila Prabhupada books, I was just gobbling them, I was just swallowing, reading one after another. When I looked at, the study material they were supposed to go to, I was just, I couldn't conceive of it. I just couldn't look at that stuff anymore. It's just so repelling. I said, what is this? I have to waste my time and energy for all this garbage practically? How is it possible? No taste, absolutely, Because it is garbage. What it makes you a greater animal. Sorry for the expression, but that's what it is. How to eat, how to sleep better, how to have sex better. That's all. That's what materialistic knowledge is all about. And when you get a higher taste, and you try to, study something, you really have to try hard. It's not easy. It's so repelling. So repelling. I had a hard time, really, Really hard time. So once you get some nectar, why going and tasting some, poison? Why ruining the life? Of course, unless there is some higher purpose or something. But we have to be really careful. Is it really so necessary? We have to be really so much aware about that fallout, radiation that's going to affect us. Maybe not immediately, but later on it can heavily affect our devotional creeper. It can ruin our devotional creeper. Especially in building up the pride that now I'm someone or something. Of course, you may say education, knowledge, it's one of the opulences. that people might be attracted to. But what kind of education? What kind of knowledge? That knowledge should actually, which lead towards renunciation, not towards the attachment, towards everything in this material world. But the knowledge which leads towards renunciation from anything material. Then that kind of knowledge is beneficial and useful. Any other knowledge which is binding, we should stay away from it as from, you know, like from the most, you know, horrifying thing. So we should be very careful. So therefore Prahlad Maharaj, he's a devotee, he had received such a wonderful mercy from Narada Muni, he had received the knowledge, he had received the real education, and when being exposed to this poison, maybe expertly might have learned how to handle it, but essentially he's not interested in utilizing it for the purpose for which it has been devised to be used for. And we should therefore learn also from Prahlad Maharaj how to present ourselves in such kind of situations when being exposed to the knowledge, and definitely stay away as far as possible. Not even try to become tempted by all the very nice offers that people are nowadays so much tempted by position, by this, by that, because ultimately we'll have to stay here and remain within this material world, taking one birth after another. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshana dashana, and suffer consequent, you know, miseries. So this is the point in this verse that, you know, we should learn from Shlav, from Prahlad Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much. Shrila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.